Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that explores the people, the stories, and the events of Central Iowa. I'm one of your hosts this morning, Greta Anderson, joined by my co-host, Kay Puttock. Hello, Kay.
Hello, Greta, and hello, listeners.
Kay often joins us when she has a story as part of our Community Service Appreciation Program, and such is the case today. It's the beginning of the month, so that means a new nonprofit will be receiving our focus. I understand that this month's nonprofit is near and dear to your heart, Kay.
Well, yes, I am a bit of an animal lover, you could say, and I've chosen the Ames Animal Shelter to receive attention this month. It's a good time to focus on the animal shelter because they have a new director, Ron Edwards, and I got to sit down and talk with him about why he was attracted to Ames and our shelter here in Ames and the direction he wants the organization to take and is already taking with it.
Oh, well, that in just a few moments. And, Kay, it seems that our whole show is devoted to community service today. Later in the show, we'll talk to Ann Naffier from a Des Moines organization called Justice for Our Neighbors, which is helping address the situation with the refugee children from Central America. In fact, this organization, Iowa-based organization, is calling for bilingual volunteers in Central Iowa to help with telephone communication. And so we're going to find out what that is all about. And finally, we'll speak with a girl from Ames who is raising money for homeless kids.
This issue of those vulnerable children has certainly captured everyone's hearts and minds, with Iowa politicians weighing in on both sides.
Yeah, and the big question is, are any of those kids coming to Iowa? But before we turn to that, let's hear about the Ames Animal Shelter. They have a new director.
Yes, and I talked to him last week about his goals and about the shelter.
And once again, this is part of KHOI's Community Service Program, where each month we highlight a different organization with interviews of staff and clients and PSAs informing our listeners about their services and how they can get involved. So, without further ado, here's my co-host Kay with Ron Edwards of Ames Animal Shelter.
My guest today is Ron Edwards, the animal control supervisor at the animal shelter on Billy Sunday Road. Well, let's start by you introducing yourself, because I understand you haven't been long in Ames and you haven't been long on this particular job. So.
Yes, I just moved here about 11 months ago. I'm born and raised in California. Saw the position for the City of Ames Animal Shelter and Animal Control and was very interested in a shelter that had a really good reputation of helping animals and helping people with animals. So applied for the job and very fortunately was selected to run the shelter. And I have absolutely just been very impressed with the team that we have up there, the staff, the volunteers. And quite honestly, the community members that are very responsible pet owners. I've been in the animal shelter industry now for about 29 years. So I've worked with several different agencies, including the largest agency in the United States for animal care and control. So I have quite a range of history with animal shelters, from animal shelters that unfortunately don't place as many animals as I wish they could, to agencies like the Ames Animal Shelter, where the adoption is the highest focus and we want to get these animals into new homes. So been very fortunate since I've been here and just really enjoy this line of work. And it really is truly my passion in life. And I can't imagine doing anything else besides animal sheltering and animal control.
Well, we're glad you've come to Ames, and thank you for coming to join us today. Now, I like that you called it animal care and control, because I notice when you look at the website, it just says animal control. So we certainly want to hear more about the care and the control during this time together. But just to make sure everyone understands where the animal shelter is.
It's over there by the soccer and sports complex. Mm-hmm. We're actually just the next driveway past that, actually down the street from the dog park. So a lot of people know where that's at. So right there on Billy Sunday Road. It's pretty easy to find.
And would you like to start by telling us the general work that's done every day, day to day, at the shelter?
Well, we have two major divisions within the agency. The primary one, and I think what I think of as kind of being the more fun and rewarding one, oftentimes is the animal shelter side. That's the animal care side. So we run the animal shelter. We have the entire staff is made up of six staff members. Three are part-time, three are full-time employees, including myself. And we have about 40 volunteers that are on the books right now. We're actually working on expanding our volunteer program and have quite a few applicants that have already applied to be part of the program. So the animal care operations, we're really providing the day-to-day care for the animals, cleaning mm-hmm. up after them, providing food, water, tender love and care, and socialization, extremely important in a shelter environment.
Right.
We do hold our animals until they get adopted, as long as they are healthy and they are adoptable. We will keep them in the shelter until they get adopted. So when you have long-term housing of animals waiting for their forever homes, we want to make sure that those animals maintain a good temperament and behavior. And to do that, you have to really socialize. You have to work with them every day. And that's something that our volunteers and our staff members do day in and day out. The dogs get out for daily exercise in our play yards. The cats have social rooms. We rotate them in every night. So they get to get out of their cat kennels and go into these rooms where they can kind of run around. They, you know, can run and play. There's lots of toys. Volunteers take them in there and brush them and pet them and just spend a lot of mm-hmm. one-on-one time with them. And that's really important in the animal care operations. We typically take in about 1,000 animals a year in the animal care operations. That would typically be about 500 cats and about 300 dogs. So that's a lot of animals to care for. We have a very small shelter. It does take quite a bit to keep them clean, keep them socialized, and care for them. But with the team of staff and volunteers that we have, we're able to do a really good job, and I'm very proud of the team that we have. The second operation is really the animal control function.
Before we get into animal control, can we just stop on some of these things? Because you said a lot of interesting things there. First of all, just to emphasize, you've got enough volunteers at the moment. In fact, you've got a backlog of volunteers.
We do.
I can understand why, because it sounds lovely, petting the animals and taking, and that's probably what attracts people. So.
Absolutely. There's some great, passionate people out there, and especially here in the Ames and the surrounding communities, there's lots of people that truly care about animals. So we do actually have an application backlog on volunteers, and we're looking at expanding the program. And in my 11 months, that's one of the major projects that I have, focused on as far as trying to revamp that.
Mm-hmm.
I came from a shelter where we had about 500 volunteers. So coming to a shelter where there's 40, now the shelter was much larger, so we could accommodate more volunteers. But I think we definitely could use more volunteers here in the Ames Animal Shelter. There's definitely enough animals that need that extra loving and special care.
Oh, I see. So it's not that... It's just that you're behind on the training of the volunteers, is what you're saying.
It is, and it's really just a revamping of the program. With the limited space that we have to figure out, a scheduling system to where we have volunteers, because we only have a limited amount of playrooms, so only certain volunteers that come in can spend time with the animals in the individual playrooms or in the play yards. So because we're limited in space, we have to limit the number of volunteers that are given time.
Actually, that reminds me. There was something in the Ames Tribune, I don't know, a few weeks ago, about big upgrades at the shelter in terms of building.
We've done some huge upgrades. The first thing that I, when I walked in, and quite honestly, even during my interview, I walked through and I said, wow, we need to do something about our cat housing. The cages that we had the cats in prior to my arrival, in my opinion, were not appropriate for cats that we were housing, especially when you're housing them long term. If it was a very temporary housing, it might have been a different opinion that I had. But I really felt that we needed to expand. So we really did a lot in our cat housing area. And because we take in more cats every year, that was a huge priority for me.
So what exactly, how did you change it?
Well, what we did was we actually purchased brand new cages using donations from all of our donors, for many years that have been donating to the animal shelter. We put those donations to good use, and we bought new cages for them. Some of the cages are almost twice the size of what we had before.
Uh-huh.
So the cats now have comfy beds in there. They all have blankets, some toys. We bought new litter boxes, food bowls, everything. So we really just enhanced our cat housing area. That was the first priority. And then just this last weekend, we had a project where we enhanced the dog area. We now have what they call coyote rollers that's on the fences on the dog play yards. And what that does is prevents dogs from jumping over. Some dogs want to try to find their families again and get out of the play yards if they're out there with volunteers or staff. And this prevents them from getting out. So that was a huge expense. And that was from a grant that we received from Pedigree. It was a $10,000 grant that we received. We had about 30 volunteers that came down. We painted different parts of the shelter, added a lot of color, added some shade canopies out there for the dogs.
Do animals notice the difference in color, or doesn't anyone know? Is it just for the people that are there?
I think it's more for the people, but making it more a pleasant place for the people
makes it more pleasant for the animals.
And absolutely helps the animals. It helps us bring people into the shelter to help find homes for our furry friends.
You also mentioned that basically all your animals, dogs and cats, stay there till they find homes. So you don't, as a general rule, unless a serious health problem, euthanize animals.
Absolutely. And honestly, that is what's something that brought me here to Ames and the operation there at the animal shelter is the focus on adopting animals. The amount of euthanasia is extremely low. We will not euthanize an animal for time or space. If there was some behavior issues that we could not work with, or if there was some severe medical issues, you know, cancer, things like that, where we could not treat it. We treat animals all the time. We've replaced or repaired broken bones and things like that. So we do go pretty far on the medical side. For example, a feral cat, a cat that has not been socialized with somebody and is not safe to put into a home. And quite honestly, it's not nice to the cat to put it into a home. They're used to running free. We actually do find barn homes for those where they can live on barns. We test them to make sure that they're not positive for any diseases. We'll vaccinate them for rabies, get them spayed or neutered. Of course, that's extremely important. And then place them into new homes. So we really focus on that. So there is, even when you look at the cats with behavior issues, the euthanasia rate is extremely low. I'm very proud to say that I would overall 97% or more of all of our animals that come into the Ames Animal Shelter are either returned back to their owners.
Because in other words, they're just lost animals.
Correct. Running around on the street and lost temporarily. Or we're placing them into new homes. We also provide a service if someone wants to surrender their pet to us, we will find that pet a new home. So those, 97%, that's really just an incredible number. And honestly, I wouldn't have even applied for the position if I thought that Ames didn't focus on placing as many animals into homes safely as possible.
Yes, I was wondering what you meant when you said the Ames shelter had a good reputation.
Yes.
If I could just dwell on the subject of euthanasia for a minute. So some shelters, not the Ames one, I really do want to emphasize this, not the Ames one, do euthanize animals as a sort of routine to make space.
Correct. There are, across the United States, there's many shelters that euthanize animals because of time and space. As I mentioned, I worked at the largest agency in the United States. Between the six shelters, there's over 90,000 animals a year that comes into that shelter. You know, more than 50% of the dogs that come in are not adopted out. More than 70% of the cats that come in are not adopted out. So those are...
So could you give me those figures again?
Sure. For dogs, and there's national statistics, the American Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the ASPCA and Humane Society of the United States, they estimate typically that 50% of dogs, and again, this is nationwide. This is not the Ames Animal Shelter. 50% of dogs that come into shelters are never adopted out or reclaimed by their owners. So they're euthanized. And the average for cats is over 75%.
Yeah, that, I think that's surprising to many people, that dogs are easier to adopt than cats. And from what you said earlier about the Ames shelter, that's also true in the Ames shelter?
Well, it's...
The dogs get adopted more than the cats?
The dogs get adopted quicker than cats typically, but it also has to do with the numbers. In the Ames shelter, we're taking in almost twice as many cats, about 500 cats, about 300 dogs. So not half, but the dogs tend to go quicker. As a matter of fact, today, for example, we don't have any dogs for adoption right now. We had a few dogs that are already on adoption homes. We're waiting to get them spayed or neutered to send them to their new homes. With cats, we probably have about 30 cats right now, and they're all waiting for their forever homes. And we do have one that's Sarah, beautiful gray long-haired cat that's been there for over 6 months now. She's almost going on her seventh month, I believe. So,
and no one snapped her up.
No one snapped her up. She's a bit of a princess, and she needs a special home, and so it's not a cat.
And they
for
do
everybody.
Need a lot of grooming.
They do.
I had a Persian cat once.
Yes, and because they're long haired, they do need a lot of brushing, and she doesn't really like to be brushed very much.
Right.
So
she
needs a special home, someone that really knows. How to deal with cat behaviors and such.
How old is she? I'm getting tempted here.
Oh, come on down. She's, I believe we have her as about 4 years old.
I've got a big dog, too. A big old sleepy Newfoundland. Do you think she'd get on well with him, her?
You know, I don't know that we've actually seen her. She came in as a stray, so we don't have a lot of history about her. Honestly, that's really a nice part of our operation is because animals some are there for a while. We can spend time and really get to know them and kind of know their little quirks and things and know kind of what kind of family we're looking for a forever home. So, but I don't know if Sarah gets along with other dogs. But
Now, I ask this question sort of applying to myself, but it could also apply equally to, I suppose, anyone that is interested in this cat. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible, for example, for someone like me to just take this cat home for a while and see, for example, how it gets on with my dog?
Sure.
You know, and then if it doesn't work out, say, sorry, I tried. And
we do that with all of our animals. We really want it to be a permanent match. So we want to make sure that it's going to fit in well in the family, whether that's getting along with other pets, people, children, whatever the case is. We want it to be a good home.
Sure.
And if for some reason it's not working out, they can be returned to the shelter. And, you know, and that helps us to give us some additional information. So we're looking at the next adopter.
Right.
We know that, you know, Sarah doesn't like dogs. So Sarah needs a home without dogs based on the information if you were to bring her back. So it really is about making a good match with the people and the pets to make sure that it's a forever home. And that's really what we're looking for.
Okay. Now, this is perhaps getting into the area of control a bit more, but I was very interested in what you were saying about barn homes for cats and, you know, some cats just don't like to be inside and how that fits in with, I understand this, it sounds very, I can understand it in a way, but it sounds a little strange to me. There's a cat leash law in Ames, right?
There is, and cats are required to be on your property. When I explain this to residents and so on, if they're reclaiming their cats, their cat got out and for some reason ended up in the shelter. When I explain the law to them, what I say is that, you know, the cats have to be maintained on your property. Unless you have some kind of cat fencing and there's specialized cat fencing, doesn't really matter how high cats, especially with their claws, can get really high fences. So what I tell people is that essentially, the law means that the cats need to be inside the house. And we strongly encourage that at the Ames Animal Shelter.
Well, they kill birds.
Well, the birds, but the dangers that they face themselves, you know, the cars, the, you know, wild animals that are out there and other cats. We've seen some cats come into the shelter that are pretty beat up and there's, you know, scratch marks, bite marks and, you know, we've seen some where they've lost their eyes or eye because of a fight either with a wild animal or another cat. There's also a lot of diseases and things. I mean, they're going to get the fleas. They're going to get ticks outside. So there's lots of dangers for them being outside, and it's just so much safer to keep them indoors. I have 7 cats, and they're all indoors.
And if that's all they've known, I suppose that's
You know, and some of them, that's all they've known, but others have actually had indoor-outdoor ability in the past. It takes some time. It takes some work and dedication. But when you think about...
Now, what exactly takes work and dedication?
Well, getting a cat that's been outdoors...
Oh, to be indoors.
To be able to keep it just strictly indoors. Mm-hmm. It takes some time and training to get them to stay indoors. And, you know, there's lots of things that cats can have, toys, scratchers, things like that. They can keep them entertained indoors just as if they were outdoors. A lot of people say they want to hunt and do those things, and that's, you know, natural cat behavior. Well, a lot of that can be accomplished with toys and things that you can do in the house and just spending time with them and playing with them. It's so much safer
yes,
for them.
Yes, I mean, just chasing toys is
yeah, and the laser light.
Kittens chase leaves and things before they chase mice and so
yeah. Yeah, and they love the little laser light. Those things are really fun to play with the cats and keeps their energy up and keeps them going.
No, I mentioned actually that I had a Persian cat, that this was a cat that I adopted. It had been, you know, used for breeding. She, I should say, Jessie. And she had always been inside. And I also had at the time a mutt that I'd got from the shelter, a mutt cat who was an outside cat at that time, very, ranging around. I thought, oh, poor cat's never been outside. I've got to let it out in my yard, She was terrified outside.
Yes.
She got to like it after a while. I mean, she'd sit on the porch and she enjoyed watching the birds, but she didn't like the outside. Yeah. She was frightened by all that space.
Yeah, a lot of them are, and that makes it really difficult if a indoor cat escapes. We get calls from pet owners quite often where they have an indoor cat that, someone left a door open or something and they've escaped. And, the cats that have never been outside like that are just absolutely terrified.
Yeah, so, Jesse wouldn't have wanted to escape, I don't think.
Yeah. So they're used to, having their food brought to them and everything. And, outdoors, a lot of them just, they can't survive. And also when you think about the weather here in Iowa,
I must say,
such
actually,
extremes.
Cats that are used to going outside from the time, they're pretty good at surviving if they've got their front claws. They can climb trees and they can – and they're pretty canny about cars, too, I think. But anyway, I'm sure if they're out in the country and there's a lot of – I don't know what kind of animals would attack cats. Badgers, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, there are some dangers out there for them, and we look at the alternative, especially with some of the feral cats that we started to talk about.
Mm-hmm. If we go into animal control now. Mm-hmm.
Sure, the feral cats, it's not humane to put them into a home. They're used to being out and being free and running wild. So we do try to get them into the shelter and get them into barn homes as soon as possible, as long as they test negative for the diseases that we test for. We do try to find the barn homes for them really quick, fairly quickly, because it's putting a cat that's used to having complete run of the area, the town, putting into a steel metal cage is not a humane thing to do long term. So, we want to find, get them out of the shelter as quickly as we can and hopefully into a barn home situation.
Now, when you say barn home, that means they have the run of the barn or the run of, like, the whole farm where the barn is, or?
Yes, and that's typically we're looking at, some of the farm locations outside of the city limits of Ames, because we're not.
Where the cat leash law doesn't apply.
Correct. Yeah, because otherwise we'd be in violation of the law that we're supposed to be enforcing. So we do try to find those homes outside of Ames, and we work with people from even, far distances to find the barn cats. So that's an important program of the animal control function. Typically, these cats are picked up in traps from residents' property or even business owners. We had a particular business here in Ames that had, I think, about 7 cats that we trapped that were, continued to reproduce. And they were actually attacking the wildlife, the beautiful birds that all the employees love to watch. So it was important to them to pick these cats up, get them spayed or neutered, tested. Well, tested first, then spayed or neutered.
So they were breeding, and there was a colony of feral cats.
Yeah, and then they started to see a decline in the types of birds that they tend to watch over there at the company. And it was real important for them. So we stepped right in, picked up every single cat. All of them were negative for any of the disease we test for, which is feline leukemia and feline AIDS. So we're able to find barn homes for all 7 of those.
And people always worry about rabies, too, but you can...
They do. And obviously that's something that's extremely important in the animal control operation because we're protecting human health. It's not very common.
And you can see. I mean, you don't have to test specifically for that as a general rule, do you?
Well,
you can see if the animal's got rabies.
To actually confirm, you do have to test. They do actually brain tissue to be able to test to see if it's positive for rabies. You can see behaviors that are associated with rabies that may lead you to believe. But in wildlife, we typically see raccoons, bats, also, are real high carriers for rabies. So that's why you always want to when you see a wild animal, you stay away from them. Mm-hmm. Even if it's a young one or something, stay away, let the professionals handle them because the potential for them carrying rabies is so high. But some of the other diseases that, say, for example, raccoons can get is the canine distemper virus. Some of the symptoms for rabies are similar to the canine distemper virus. So if someone sees a raccoon that's maybe spinning in circles or falling over, in the middle of the day or just unusual behavior, it could be that it has canine distemper and not rabies. But it could be rabies too. So again, regardless of what it may have, stay away from it.
Right.
Call the animal control professionals.
You could carry distemper back to your own animals too if you got too close to it, presumably.
Yeah, You could. And yeah. You know, again, we have a very responsible community here in Ames, so I think most people have their pets vaccinated. It's mm-hmm. extremely important that your pet sees your veterinarian right. and goes through the vaccination protocol that they recommend.
When we were just chatting before, you were talking about some of the wildlife that you're beginning to get into that. Sure. Could you say a bit more about wildlife control?
Sure. We pick up – and if we get a report of wildlife that's just kind of crossing the street or they were seen late at night near the trash cans, they love trash cans that are not secured properly, and mostly raccoons that love to get in there. And mm-hmm. It's a fiesta for them and a smorgasbord. But we really try to encourage people just to let the wild animals be. If they appear to be sick, injured – you know, they are causing a nuisance, then that's when we will intervene. Animal control will respond out there. If it's just something you see an opossum in your yard when you go out late at night, we're going to probably tell you, leave it alone.
Yeah.
And when you wake up in the morning, I can guarantee he's not going to be there.
Right. I saw opossum. They're sort of ghostly looking at night.
Yes. Well, and they're scary looking. They got a lot of sharp teeth.
I was surprised how light colored it was in the porch light there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and a lot of times they're using the different yards and backyards and front yards as a thoroughfare to get to another mm-hmm. location. But mm-hmm. a lot of people, you know, don't realize. And sometimes people will panic when they see these wild animals and think that, you know, they're being invaded by these possums or raccoons. And, you know, they've been in the area forever.
Sure.
And we just really want to try to coexist with them when we can.
Mm-hmm.
But if they are becoming a nuisance, we'll absolutely step in and see what we can do. We also refer people to wildlife companies that can help control if you have raccoons up in your attic and they have a nest up there. There's things that, you know, you want to do, but there's a lot of things you can do to help prevent some of that stuff too.
I think some people have perhaps a false idea about adoptable animals, that they're at the shelter because they're a problem.
I think that is definitely a kind of a myth that's out there.
A behavior problem.
It is, and I think they think that there's something wrong with them. The animals at shelters are broken. There's something that, there's some reason why they're there. And that's not always the case. I can, you know, speak for a lot of the animals that are surrendered to us. Most of the reasons are because of the issues that we have as humans. For example, people have pets in their apartments that they're not supposed to have. The maintenance guy comes in and sees there's a dog or a cat in the apartment, and then they have to get rid of the pet. They have to surrender it to us so we can find a new home. That's no fault of the animal whatsoever. Right. It's just someone that didn't plan ahead and think about how can I provide a forever home for my little mm-hmm. furry friend mm-hmm. here. So a lot of other reasons people lose their jobs, they're moving, or maybe they're moving into an apartment that does not allow pets where they used to be able to have pets. So those are heartbreaking situations where you have someone that has to surrender someone, a pet that they love. Those are really hard things to deal right. with. And we see that often at the shelter where someone has to break that commitment to that animal. Mm-hmm. All of my pets at home, and they have always been since I've been in this industry for 29 years, have all been from the shelter. You know, I may be biased, but I have never had a bad furry friend at home. Some of them are a little naughty from time to time, but, that's part of
life.
It's part of life, taking care of my beautiful furry friends.
Well, thank you so much. But this has been very interesting. Is there anything that you feel is important to add?
Well, I think, you know, there's such a range of animal shelters across the United States, and there's a lot of misconceptions and misunderstandings and, quite honestly, absolute stretch of the truth. You know, I think if people really get to know our shelter and other shelters too, go there, meet with the staff, meet with the volunteers that are there, see what they do, look at the data, the statistics at the shelter and see – rather than assuming that a shelter is maybe operated in a manner that, you know, maybe another shelter is that you've heard, you know, horror stories about, come inside, you know, look and see. There's nothing, that, especially at the Ames Animal Shelter, that we have to hide. We're extremely proud of the work that we do. It's really a nice place to come visit, even if you're not looking for a forever friend. Come down to the shelter, meet the staff, take a look at what we have, what we're doing. Ask as many questions as you want. We're here for you. We really want to be known as the place where people and their pets are given the assistance that they need. The community's animal shelter, we're there to help the community with their pet needs.
I've been talking to Ron Edwards, who's the animal control supervisor at the Ames Animal Shelter. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
I'm just a walking my dog, singing my song, strolling along. Yeah, it's just me and my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong. My life was lonely and blue. Yeah, I was sad as a sailor. I was an angry one too. Then there was you appeared when I was entangled with youth and fear and nerves jingle jangled, vermouth and beer were getting me mangled up. But then I looked in your eyes and I was no more a failure. You looked so wacky and wise. And I said, Lord, I'm happy 'cause I'm just a walking my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong, yeah. It's just me and my dog singing our song, strolling along. 'Cause I don't care about your hating and your doubt, and I don't care what the politicians spout. If you need a companion, why just go out to the pound and find yourself a hound and make that doggy proud. 'Cause that's what it's all about. My life was tragic and sad. I was the archetypal loser. I was a pageant gone bad. Then there was you on time and wagging your tail in the cutest mime. But you was in jail. I said, woof, be mine. And you gave a wail. And then I was no longer alone. And I was no more a boozer. I said, Lord, I'm happy 'cause I'm just walking my dog, singing my song, strolling along. Yeah, it's just me and my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong, 'cause I don't care about your hating and your doubt, and I don't care what the politicians spout. If you need a companion, why just go out to the pound and find yourself a hound and make that doggy proud.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We're your hosts, Kay Puttock and Greta Anderson, and that was a song by singer-songwriter Nellie Kay.
Kay interviewed the director of the Ames Animal Shelter, Ron Edwards, as part of our Community Service Appreciation Program, where each month we highlight an organization in the community through interviews and PSAs about its services and how you can get involved.
Our next guest found herself interested in a problem that our community faces and decided that she was going to do something about it.
That's right. Aurora Bataza, age 10, has been conducting a fundraiser, first at the Orange Leaf Frozen Yogurt Store. She also conducted a garage sale where she collected items from the community and then sold them for donations. And then she also has an online website called at youcaring.com. That's youcaring.com, and we'll link to that on our webpage. We are particularly proud of Aurora because she has also participated in the youth radio program at the station here. So welcome to our show, Aurora.
Thank you.
So this is a little different from how we've taped before because this is live. And so Aurora, can you explain what your fundraiser is for?
It's to help the homeless get through their problems.
Okay.
And for them to find clothing, food, and shelter.
Okay. And how did you hear about the problems that the homeless in our community have?
Well, my grandma was talking, and they were saying on how many people there were, and they were so sad, so I did it.
Okay. Your grandma, Jerry Hyde, runs the youth services at Ames Public Library. Is that the grandmother you're speaking of?
Yes.
Okay, and from what I understand, you're the funds will go to the Ames Community School District homeless liaison program. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So it's not just the homeless in general, but you're thinking about kids like yourself who might not have a home?
Yes. The average of homeless per year is 200 homeless, and the age usually is 9-year-olds.
Okay. That's quite remarkable that 200 children in the Ames Community School District are without a home, and that when they look at the whole group of them, the average kid age is 9, and you're 10.
Did you have a goal to reach a certain amount in your fundraising?
Yes, my goal is $1,000.
Have you gotten there?
Yes, and then I had an uncle who would match it. His name is Francis Hyde, and he's from Duluth, Minnesota. He matched $1,000, and then I still have the website going.
So you're still raising money from the website?
Yes.
That's terrific, Aurora. It's really sad to think about the very basic struggles some kids have to go through. I suppose you'll be thinking about that when you return to school in a couple of weeks.
Yep.
Nobody wants to be known for being homeless.
No.
But it's probably not too hard to see which kids at your school are struggling in certain ways.
Well, a homeless person is considered like if you were someone moving from a friend's house, friend to friend, or trying to find this other home, you are considered a homeless person because you really don't have a place to call home.
That's a good point. You know, we think of homeless people, we think of maybe somebody with a backpack on the street. But in this case,
They could be staying with a friend.
Yeah,
but it's still a very insecure situation. Very difficult.
Have you learned a lot doing this?
Yeah.
What's been the thing that's struck you the most?
Well, the garage sale kind of did. It was a really hot day outside.
So you had to suffer a little bit, but a lot of people showed up?
Yeah.
Okay, well, Aurora, it sounds like you're doing great work.
It really does, Aurora. Yeah, it's terrific. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming by.
Goodbye.
Okay, bye. Well, Kay, we've heard about the homeless children in Ames, Iowa, and now we're turning to another group of children whose circumstances are rather desperate, the refugee children coming across the Arizona border, mainly from Central America, whose countries, like Honduras, have become fraught with gang warfare and economic devastation.
Yes, we've certainly heard about the controversy that their detention is causing, with very loud voices calling for them to be sent back, while other equally urgent voices are calling for rapid and merciful actions.
And here in Iowa, the question has been, will we take in some of these kids to our state, find them homes in Iowa, or help them find homes with relatives elsewhere? Governor Branstad has resisted this idea, while Jack Hatch, the gubernatorial challenger from the Democratic Party, and several other politicians, such as the mayor of Davenport, have been calling for a coalition of mercy. We now understand that an organization from Des Moines called Iowa Justice for Our Neighbors is calling for bilingual volunteers to assist with telephone communications. And we have on the line Ann Naffier from this organization. Hello, Ann, and welcome to the show.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
First of all, Ann, I guess let's just cut to the chase. Are there child refugees now in Iowa, or do you anticipate there being so in the near future?
There are definitely children who have arrived from the border who are fleeing the violence in their countries in Central America, and some of them have made their way to Iowa already.
About how many of children are we talking about?
Well, you know, in the paper it was reported that I think it was about 139 children perhaps have been released to people in Iowa. I'm not sure what the time period for that is. I know that we here have been seeing children coming from the border for the past several years. So it could be that these are that number covers several years of children coming here, or it could be that they are people more recently who have been able to come to Iowa. So it's not very clear. It's not, we are not being overburdened. We don't have lots and lots of children coming as a mob, but there definitely are some of those children who make their way to Iowa.
And what do you know about the situations of most of these children? Do they have families somewhere in the States that then you're trying to match them up with, or are they going into foster care?
Well, what happens on the border is, you know, the children are, they're fleeing the violence from their country. They're getting to the border between Mexico and the United States. And there, the vast majority of them, once they cross the border, they're turning themselves into immigration, to immigration officials on the border. And so they're being detained right there at the border. At that point, because of federal legislation passed under President Bush, I think in about 2007 or 2008, they are handed over to the Department of Human Services, or the Office of Refugee Resettlement. So that would be in the federal office. And they take them in, they put them in special shelters that they have set up, but they also try to contact those children's family members, perhaps parents who are already here in the United States, or what I've seen more often, aunts and uncles, people who are already living in the United States who are related to them. And then those family members fill out an application, pass a security check, and ask for the children to be released to them. So the children who would be here in Iowa who've gone through this system would be children who already had family members in Iowa, either adult family members, either parents or aunts and uncles, or sometimes older brothers and sisters, who filled out an application to have the child released to them. So they're living with family members.
Okay, and the call for bilingual volunteers that you made, can you describe how these volunteers will be used? Who will they be talking to on the phone?
Okay, well, let me explain first what Justice for Our Neighbors does. We are a nonprofit agency associated with the United Methodist Church, and we offer free legal representation to immigrants in their immigration proceeding. So we're working on it from the legal immigration side. And what these children, even though they are released to family members at this point, and perhaps in the future, there are organizations in Iowa who would like to bring the children here who do not have family members but could be released to other foster families or other places that could take care of them. Those children, no matter who they're living with, they clearly have an immigration legal issue. None of them have come into the United States in a legal way with a visa. None of them have permission immediately when they come into the United States to stay in the United States. However, many of them are fleeing violence and persecution and do have the right to apply for political asylum here in the United States. And there are a couple of other programs that they may qualify for as well in order to get immigration legal status. Because there are children here already, and because there's an awful lot of talk of perhaps getting more children, we as a legal agency felt that we needed to provide the services for them to be able to get in touch with attorneys that they can, those who can pay for it, to connect them with private attorneys, and those who are not able to pay for it, see if we can get pro bono legal assistance for them. However, we need to find them first. So we have set up this phone line for them to call if they have legal questions about their immigration status and what their possibilities are, and for us to keep in contact with them and try to figure out really what's going on down there on the ground and make sure that people are represented. So what we're asking volunteers to do, bilingual volunteers, so Spanish-English, is to help us staff this phone line, to be answering the phone, to be answering any immediate questions, not legal questions, but, you know, like, what do I do now? And to then do a short screening of people who are calling, so that then we as the attorneys can call these people back, meet with them, and figure out whether they do have legal options, and then connect them to people who can help them with that.
Okay, so we're talking strictly at this moment about children who have been placed in Iowa because there are family members already here.
At this moment, those would be the only children who are here in Iowa. However, as I said, there are a lot of organizations in Iowa. As you mentioned, the mayor of Davenport. There's also the Eichner Foundation, which has started a project, 1,000 Kids for Iowa. At this point, it's unclear whether any of those will actually be able to bring children to Iowa. But if they do, we certainly need to have the legal support in place for them.
Iowa has a long tradition of welcoming immigrants, especially refugees.
Exactly. Iowa has a very long tradition of doing that. Started, you know, probably much longer ago, but most recently we remember under Governor Robert Ray that we brought refugees in from Southeast Asia, and we've had a tradition of welcoming refugees ever since then. Justice for Our Neighbors has been around for about 14 years, and it specifically works through United Methodist Churches through Iowa, helping immigrants and refugees who need legal services. So that is the main purpose of our organization.
If somebody would like to contact you as a bilingual volunteer to assist with these communications, how should they reach you?
They can call me at 515-255-9809, extension 201, or I can give my email. My email is ANN, which is my first name, Ann, and then a period, and then Iowa JFON. So that's IOWAJFON. That's a Justice for Our Neighbors, but just the initials, @gmail.com.
Okay. We'll repeat that in a few moments. Have you spoken with any guardians of children yourself?
I've spoken with family members of children and the children themselves, yes.
What have those conversations been like? What has struck you?
Well, you know, what has most struck me is the fear that these children are living in. The couple of people I've worked with recently have had their parents back in Central America make that choice to send their children to the United States. And I can't even imagine what heart-wrenching decision that is, especially since many of them know how dangerous the trip to the United States is. But they're making that decision because they're finding that life is even more dangerous in Central America. The stories of the gang violence, the stories of forcibly recruiting young boys as young as 11 and 12 years old, and recruiting young girls, too, or raping young girls as part of their initiation process into gangs is truly horrifying. And I cannot even imagine going through it and doing what these children have had to go through and making the decisions that their parents have had to make.
And so are most of the children sort of puberty age or sort of?
You know, most of the kids that I've run into so far are older than the age of 12. I have not run into really, really small children who have come here on their own. But you know, so they're old enough that they're, first of all, in danger of gang recruitment and also that the parents, I assume, felt that they would be able to have some ability to make good decisions on their way up to the United States.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a sign of the terrible dangers they face if parents think it's less dangerous to send 12-year-olds on that kind of a trip.
Exactly, exactly.
How do they get from Central America up to the border?
You know, what we think is that the drug cartels themselves or other gangs or just unscrupulous business people have set up, really they are human trafficking networks that allow people to come, that people pay for. The parents pay money in order to have their children transported to the United States.
Well, and in the meantime, our U.S. foreign policy towards these countries where all of this gang violence exists, do you know anything about that?
Well, yeah, it's a long and sordid story. You know, back in the 80s, there were a lot of civil wars in Central America that largely were funded by the United States.
Right.
And many, many people were escaping those civil wars, came to the United States. For a long time, those immigrants were here in the United States. They were undocumented. They could not avail themselves to services here in the United States. And they settled in places like Los Angeles and Washington, D.C. and Chicago. And their kids grew up in environments in which they were exposed to street gangs in the United States, mostly Los Angeles. The root of these gangs in Central America really start in Los Angeles back in the 1980s. After the civil wars ended in Central America, many, many, many people from Central America were deported back to, you know, from Los Angeles and other big cities in the United States, were deported back to El Salvador and Honduras and Guatemala, where the wars there had just ended. There wasn't a good economy. You had a lot of people with guns because they had been in a war situation with nothing to do. And the gang culture from Los Angeles really took root in El Salvador and in other countries in Central America. So now the same people who were fleeing violence caused by the United States, or funded largely by the United States in the 80s, now have come back and inflicted a new kind of violence that they learned here in the United States. So it's really just a vicious circle.
That's amazing. And I'm aware of the story covered by Gary Webb in San Jose of the connections between those civil wars, the beginning of the crack epidemic in the United States, where the CIA has some complicity in kind of creating that gang culture in Los Angeles.
Right, right, exactly.
But there's a movie coming out about Gary Webb, and I'm looking forward to that. Well, Anne, we're out of time here, and it's wonderful work you're doing. I'll share your phone number again. That's 515-255-9809, extension 201. Thank you so much for the work you're doing.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We just spoke with Anne Naffier of Justice for Our Neighbors, an organization in Des Moines, Iowa, which is dealing with children who have already come to Iowa because they have relatives here from the border, and is preparing possibly for more.
We started off the hour with my interview with Ron Edwards, the new director of the Ames Animal Shelter.
And we also heard from Aurora Bataza, a 10-year-old in the Ames Community School District who is conducting a fundraiser for homeless kids in the school system. And she still has a website up that she's raising money on, and we'll link to that on our website as well.
Links to all of that information will be available on our website, khoifm.org, by the end of the day. That's khoifm.org.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Kay Puttock. Our engineer today is Becca Brown.
Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. If you'd like to get involved, come on down to the station at 410 Douglas Avenue or give us a call at 292-2878. That's 292-2878.
As always, your participation as audience, as well as your generous contributions, are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and
see you again on the radio.
My life was tragic and sad. I was the archetypal loser. I was a pageant gone bad. Then there was you on time and wagging your tail in the cutest mime. But you was in jail. I said, woof, be mine, and you gave a wailing, and I was no longer alone, and I was no more a boozer. We'll make the happiest home. And I said, Lord, I'm happy, 'cause I'm just a walking my dog, singing my song, strolling along. Yeah, it's just me and my dog, catching some sun. We can't go wrong, 'cause I don't care about your hating and your doubt.